You're listening to Puck and Roll.
Hello, and welcome back to the Puck and Roll podcast. This is episode 9 of season 2, and for the second time in a few days, we are joined by Marc Dumont. Do you call it by Mark or Marc? What do you prefer in these intros?
I prefer Gulgamor the Destructor.
So we are joined by Gulgamor the Destructor, a famous writer for Montreal Hockey Now. We had a great time on the first
I rambled a lot that episode. I think I you know what's great with you guys? You don't get thrown when I switch to seven other, you know, when I end up talking about Lyle Odelein and and Steve Penny, but you asked me about Arbor Jacka. Yeah, I love it when people can handle that. It's fun.
This podcast is very much like Martin St. Louis coaching. It is not based on a system or a structure, it is a concept.
If you guys want a little insider tidbit, we only had 5 things written down for that episode.
Oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. We had not many notes prepared.
Well, I'll tell you right now, when I do radio or anything like that, when I did stuff with the Habs, they didn't, like, at first they'd write up scripts, and they still would at the end, but I wouldn't. Yeah, no, I don't. I'm gifted with the gab of a Franco-Ontarian, so I don't know if, obviously, near Carlton and whatnot, people will know about Franco-Ontarians. Mais on parle beaucoup, puis on parle vite, puis on parle avec nos mains. And I got the Irish side. And you know what Irish people are all about? They're getting around and telling good stories. So, yes, I am one of the loudest and most annoying guests you will ever have on this podcast.
And last episode, Mark teased everyone with a certain talking point. So, Mark, you brought up the name.
Before we get into it, just a quick trigger warning for people, because we are going to speak. It's not directly related to it, but there is a component of sexual assault here that will be discussed.
For sure. And we are going to then leave a timestamp in the description for those who do want to skip forward.
Now we're going to do our best not to, you know, trigger anything, but it will be discussed, because I think at this point you can't ignore it, unfortunately. So.
Exactly.
Oh, no, and sorry. Fortunately, we should never ignore it. Sorry, that came off quite wrong, but you know what I was saying. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Logan Mailloux, Mark, you wanted to talk about how he might possibly not be as good of a player.
Is that what you took? Okay.
I got that you are hearing the narrative that is becoming quite popular now.
Well, one of the big things to me is, and it's been recently, I don't know if you guys follow Heidi, but like...
We are good friends with Heidi.
He's been on the pod.
Okay.
We are all good friends.
So I'm glad he brought that up, because for the longest... Okay, here's the other part. When I was with the Habs, first of all, this was decided long ahead. This wasn't because Logan Mailloux was there. Like, they knew well ahead, which is kind of embarrassing because their lack of preparation. They didn't think they'd get hit on it. But hey, hockey never gets held accountable. So that's why we see stuff like Mitchell Miller. And I'm great. Finally, the fans are pushing back.
Yeah. But
in one fell swoop, not only did you not even get a guy that, like, I mean, the scouts that were watching him play in third Sweden 3, were like, yeesh, like, he's this guy. Yeah, he can't make a decision. He has no gap control. He has no control of his body. But obviously, he's got a good shot. However, I'll say this right now. In one fell swoop, with a dumb pick, and I will maintain it's a dumb pick by the Habs. I'm no longer in the point where I'm upset at Logan Mailloux. He went through the system, and what he did was terrible. Don't get me wrong, but it was the Habs that pushed this on everyone else. So when they did that, it sapped all the energy from our marketing team. And don't forget, Montreal Canadiens, it's over half of the managers are women. Well over half of the employees are women. So my marketing team at that time, there was about 13 women, and, you know, the other guy was off. So I was supposed to go live. I was supposed to go, because I was their guy, right, to talk about draft picks and all that, because no one else in the organization actually pays attention to hockey. So when it came to marketing, I actually had to use knowledge. And I remember my boss at the time, because I was going to be the first employee of the Canadians to face music. And that night, I knew, hey, I have my 8 a.m. hit. I'm going to lose my job. That's what's happening. All right, let's go. And my boss was smart enough to say, Mark, we're not putting you out there in front of him. Like, that's not your responsibility whatsoever. So a woman had to protect me, a man, from a man's decision to give privilege to another man who was horrible to a woman. You know what I mean? Like, isn't that kind of, it's sad. It's pathetic. But it's very indicative of how hockey goes. However, all this to say, I was getting a lot of weird pushback on my U. I feel like there's been a bit of an overcompensation here. Now I'm no longer talking about what he did. To me, the onus falls on the Montreal Canadiens at this point to make it right. But it's clear that there is an overcompensation for people that, for whatever reason, have not been watching him play. Because this is a guy who I would say, let's say I'm rating his shot, 9 on 10, right? 9 on 10?
His shot in a vacuum, yes.
Okay. Gap control, 0 on 10.
Yeah.
Right?
Hockey sense.
0 on 10. Question. Zero on 10.
Because he makes a lot more bad decisions than he does good ones.
Decision making, absolutely terrible. His positioning is confusing.
Inconsistent, lacks structure.
He reminds me a lot of a Nathan Beaulieu on his draft year, if I'm being perfectly honest, just not as physical. So I think we need to relax a little bit. And if you actually watch him play, yes, he's at a point per game now. It's his D2 year. And people will say, he missed his D. Yeah, why? Why did he miss it? Is it because the league banned him because he did something disgusting? Oh, well, you know, like, whoopsie doopsie, you effed around. Now you found out. Like, that's, oh no, a shame. Like, that's.
Like, does it remind you of your youth? Because you seem to be reminiscing with this guy.
Right. Like, that's the thing.
I literally had interactions on Twitter where they, about my you, and they literally ended up with the other person, typically always a middle aged or older guy, white guy.
Yeah.
Ending up saying, well, yeah, I made in a similar thing my youth, but like I moved on. I'm a good person now. And it's like, that's
what I've got. Like, is
cool.
Well, I have the luxury of being a 17-year-old in this industry. And I have gotten, especially on Facebook, the people on Facebook love this kid. Mm-hmm. And in my Facebook bio, it says 17 years old, first year of CJEP.
Yeah.
And I will get, you're 17. Haven't you made a mistake? I have never made a mistake.
Well
no,
it's like I did. Yeah, ball. Yeah, guys. Once I got caught, because I used to live in Orleans in Ottawa. So shout out to
Orleans.
Oh, no, no. It was great. When I moved there, it was like 1988. There were six houses.
Oh, okay.
So I'm thinking
Orleans now.
Yeah, no. Now it's basically like Sim City on a terrible acid trip there. But
yep.
Pretty much. Yeah, and actually, I completely forget. Now I'm just thinking of Orleans. Now I'm a little homesick. I want Frito Mania. I want my poutine. What were you talking about 2 seconds ago, Aaron? Oh, yeah, Logan Mayu. With the people say he made mistakes. Yeah, I got caught once stealing pumpkins in Orleans, and we'd go on the roof of – okay, I probably shouldn't be saying this, but I was a minor, and we'd chuck pumpkin – like not big ones, but we'd chuck pumpkins at like big trucks from the roof of a school. And now white privilege.
Did you take pictures of the cars without their consent?
No. Well, then white privilege. Guess what happened? The firefighters came and they got us down. That was it. That was the end of everything. But that being said, I think there's a significant difference between second chances and second privilege. And exactly. None of us have made. Maybe some have and maybe some are remorseful, but it's still a mistake. When we say you deserve a second chance, that doesn't mean that they get no consequence. It means that eventually, once they show some sort of remorse, which I'll say this, I think Mayu has shown remorse. I think he honestly, whether it's a PR stunt or not, he said the right things. It's been the opposite of Mitchell Miller, right?
Like Mitchell Miller is just an absolute trash.
Terrible person.
Human being.
So
I covered the entire story.
Every single action is repulsive and there is literally...
That came on, oh my God.
But you know what? I'll say this right now. Mitchell Miller might be, ironically, one of the biggest motivators of change in hockey because fans said no. They're like, absolutely not. And when we realize fans have more power than anyone else in this league, that's where it becomes a factor. And if fans keep I don't mind what happened with Mayu. I actually love that I think his feet got held under the fire way more than guys before him. But that's amazing. That's fantastic. Let's keep that up from here on in. You know, at one point when I was working with the Canadians, you have guys like Nick Cousins. You can Google his history. Sean Burke, Google his history. You know, so there's a lot of ugliness in hockey. And if fans can continue to push back, better, the more the better. You know, that's absolutely great.
Now let's take care of Ian Cole.
Yeah, well, yeah. No comment there. But, you know, because I kind of get how the whole rumors, when I worked with the Habs, there were so many weird rumors that were going around with me and, like, coworkers. But all this to say, Logan Mailloux, how can I put this? He's okay. He's just okay. That's essentially my scouting report is, this is a guy whose skills will be very difficult to translate to the NHL. And that's what I look for in players. So when you see Lane Hutson walking the line, and everyone said he was a bad skater. No, he's fine, right?
His lateral mobility is incredible. His pivoting is
not
trash.
Good. Yeah, yeah. But his lateral, and which, when you're going to be using that a lot. But anyways, all this to say, I look at Lane Hutson. I look at Owen Beck, and I think those are prospects. Their skills will be easily translatable to the NHL, because that's the biggest thing, right? Can you repeat this? And
of course,
I'll be perfect. Like, and again, I hold nothing against Mailloux at this point, but I don't see him being a top four defenseman. And if he's not a top four defenseman, I don't see much value, because defensively, he's awful. He's awful. He's a really bad in his own zone, and this is playing junior hockey. So. So everyone that wants us to rate him higher and talk about him more, it's not that people are holding things against him. Maybe. And you know what? Fair enough. Because what happened there, let's keep in mind that the demographic for hockey, not just the employees, but the fans, are over 50% women, right? So stuff like that, we have to be very, very, you know, not delicate about, but we have to do a better job making it more comfortable for the people that, you know, share our sports. But he's just not good enough to really be considered a top prospect in my mind, which blows my mind. Why did they go after him at, what was it, 31, 32?
31.
Okay, I will say this. I would understand.
Well, actually 30.
If he was a top
30,
five.
Yeah. It was.
If he was 30, a top five.
Seattle.
If he was a top five, I would have said, yeah, okay. Like, it's disgusting, right?
Yeah.
But I get it. To me, it was such a stretch and such a disappointing. Anyways, my heart sunk when I heard. I knew it was coming.
Oh, me
I
too.
Knew I knew he was going to get drafted, and my heart just sunk right there. And you know, thankfully my boss, because you know I always try to risk. I feel like we don't do a very good job making it a comfortable situation for anyone that's, you know, not straight white males. But you know, we need to do better than that. My boss allowed me not to write about it, but I was actually cowardly about it at the beginning. I should have called it out. Like, I should have. I worked for the team, and I stayed silent because I wanted to pay rent. But in retrospect, you know, it was cowardly. It was very cowardly. And like, I'm at the bottom of the, you know, the ladder. I get paid the least. Trust me, it was a work of passion there, but I still needed to pay rent. And I took the cowardly way of saying, I just didn't talk about him. If you Google Logan Mailloux, you're going to see the first reference about 3 weeks ago is when I first started talking about him.
So what I've done with Mailloux is every single time I get into a fight on Facebook or Twitter about him, I watch one more game of his.
Yeah.
And it just... So
it reinforces the opinions.
I've watched 17 games on Mailloux.
Yeah. Okay, I've only watched about six, because like I even checked out London before he got there. Man, they were bad. They were just not fun to watch. Anyways, all this to say is that
I've seen about three highlights that are actually highlights.
Well, that's the other part too. Like anyways, the highlights, it's funny. We see that. But when you look at a guy like Owen Beck, you could take away all his points and I'd still have him rated as one of the top prospects. Because it's that intelligence. Obviously, I don't really care about face-offs, but coaches do.
Yeah.
It's his cerebral approach. If you want the biggest juxtaposition in hockey IQ, it's Owen Beck and Logan Mailloux.
For sure. And Mark, for instance, are you familiar with Jack Mateer as a player?
No, I am not.
He is the number one defenseman for the Ottawa 67s. So he plays, he's top of the power play every single.
So that means you've been, I love scouting other players when you were looking for Roar, right?
Well, I mean, I live in Ottawa, so I go to basically every home game. So I'm
according to Facebook
roster.
Logic, Jack Mateer will win like 20 horses.
So Jack Mateer is a 6'4", 6'5" defenseman drafted in the fourth round in 2021. So same draft as Mailloux, and he is currently outproducing Mailloux in more games played in the OHL. Given, yes, he is on a better team. Like Ottawa is at like a 17-1 record. Like it's a very good team, but he is their number one defenseman, and he's outproducing Mailloux. And to me, he is barely a B-level prospect. He has a very, very flawed game.
We knew this before the draft.
Right?
Like everyone talked about it. They're like, the skills aren't there.
Like Mateer shoots from the point every single time he gets the puck. He is infuriating to watch as a prospect. And he's a Nashville prospect, and despite his production, I he should not be in their top 10 prospects.
Nope.
And they don't have a very good point to begin with.
Let's be honest.
And he's outproducing Mayu.
Well, there you go. And Mayu is obviously, I feel like we're actually being a little too harsh, but I will say this. He's taking a crap load of shots, a lot of them on the power play. Four of his six goals are on the power play. I forget what. But right now, I just don't see a guy that can translate his game into the NHL at any point. Because when I go back, Aaron, and you might have seen this, but when I go back to like one of the first games I watched or some of the games I watched from other seasons, there's no improvement. It's
exactly.
It's confusing. There's absolutely no improvement whatsoever. And at one point this summer, someone was saying that he should be considered the Quebec media was saying he should be considered the Habs' best defensive prospect. And that was just such overcompensation. Like, go buy a Hummer and White Oakleys and deal with your midlife crisis without throwing. Like, first of all, Lane Hudson was in the mix, everything. Yeah,
Caden Gula was in the mix there too.
Yeah, exactly.
Jordan Harris, Arbor Jack. I could go forever. Jaden Struble.
Exactly. So I feel like there's been
so many options.
There's a lot of overcompensation in his case. That being said, I'm not saying he's a bad player. I just have a really hard time. Kind of almost reminds me more of Morgan Ellis in the sense that he was pretty darn good in who was he playing for? He was playing for Cape Breton at one point, and he was really good for Shawinigan when they won the Memorial Cup. But you could tell that that was a guy whose skills would never translate to the NHL. So, I'm looking up here. He had three games with the Habs. Anyways, so hopefully he's not another Morgan Ellis, but I'll be perfectly honest. I've seen very little in terms of improvement. And what do you do when you get in the NHL? You improve. You have to listen. You have to absorb it. It's a lot. And I just don't know if he's able to process that information.
It's kind of, for me, there are two big things with Mayu and that I'm very confident about. One of them is that he has such a long road to be NHL caliber. Like there's so many things that he needs to patch to even stay afloat in the NHL. Mm-hmm. If you're going from
because between you and me, coaches in the NHL would not tolerate his style of play. Like, however, not even for now. That being said, he's 19. So,
however, the second point I wanted to say was I'm equally confident that he is going to log over 10 NHL games within the next 2 years. Like, I am very confident that that whether it's with the Habs or if a team wants to buy low on him. Mm-hmm. That he is going to play NHL, maybe say 3 years instead of two. That he is going to get NHL opportunities, and probably. That despite putting up bad results, because he is very big and an extremely smooth skater, he will be fed minutes wherever he plays in his career.
His skating is very good.
It's mesmerizing. It's
saved him in a lot of, because especially we've talked about the decision making, but his skating does save him from a lot of that decision making. Now, hey, speaking of tall guys that'll get games no matter what, Jared Tenorti's in a top four by now. I don't know if you guys knew this, but he's in the Blackhawks top four. So if there was ever a guy who was just big and tall and got chances because his dad Mark Tenorti was a bit of a badass, then I wouldn't be surprised if I saw Mayu get that same type of opportunity. And he's a first round pick. You want to give him the opportunity if he earns it. Absolutely.
So you tell somebody at any given point that Jared Tenorti and Jack Johnson are a top defensive pairing. Mm-hmm. Guess which team and which year? Nobody's guessing Chicago in 2022.
No, absolutely not. And
hilarious.
It's just kind of funny to me because I remember when we were talking about the draft, we were looking at, I think he got drafted at the same year as, they even moved up to get Jared Tenorti, right?
They did.
Fourth overall, right?
And I'm looking.
It was around that. Yeah, it was one of the last times.
Right before Kevin Hayes, right before Kuznetsov, right before Charlie Coyle, right before Brock Nelson.
Oh my God. There's a lot of names in there.
But anyway,
I'm happy I wasn't a Habs fan back then.
Right? Yeah. But I remember was that the year that they got all the I'm actually browsing HockeyDB trying to see more.
Is that all the second rounders?
Well, I'm trying to figure out if it was the year that they got like five different defensemen and everyone's like, yeah, the defense is perfect forever. Which is
now it's actually kind of looking like that. I'm not gonna lie.
Well, yeah, but here's the thing is that at one point when we had Beaulieu, what was the name of the guy who's leading the KHL in scoring the last 2 years as a defenseman?
Was it not Chris Weidman?
Chris Weidman did 2 years ago.
Darren Dietz is who I'm talking about.
Yes, Darren Dietz.
So at one point, the Montreal Canadiens in about 2 years, they went and they got Mac Bennett was actually supposed to be a good prospect. And then they had Morgan Ellis, Jared Tenorti, Darren Dietz, Magnus Nygren. I don't know if you remember him. Josiah Dzie and Nathan Beaulieu. And everybody was doing backflips saying we never have to draft another defenseman again. And no one panned out from those 2 years except for, I mean, Beaulieu, but Gallagher.
Beaulieu's been a sixth defenseman for the last five seasons.
Yeah, and he's turned into a tough guy. But really, Gallagher was the big, you know, get there. So when I hear people saying we're stock for years, I kind of agree. This is the deepest they've ever been.
But they lack enough high end talent.
Yes,
on that back
yes. There's
end.
No game breaker. Exactly.
Well, Elaine Hudson could become a number one defenseman.
Oh, it's either he will or he won't make the NHL. It's one or the other, in my opinion. Like,
I think ideally Elaine Hudson is number two defenseman. I think in a perfect world, he is your offensive dynamo. On a top pairing with a guy that can do it all. Lane Hudson's always going to have some deficiencies. Yes, he has good gap control, but his defensive positioning is
questionable at time. Now, I'm going to give him a little bit of a break here because going from the USHL to the NCAA,
it's a huge progression.
These guys, when I spoke to Jaden Struble, and actually it was Jordan Harris who explained to me, he's like, hey, I'd never seen X's and O's on the boards that they use, not a chalkboard, but you know what I mean? It's like, I hadn't seen that in the USHL my entire life. The first time I saw it was when I got to college. So it's a big deal. So
Jordan Harris went from high school hockey to college, didn't he? I don't think he ever played in the USHL.
Is high school, right?
No, USHL is junior hockey.
Yeah, but they're high school age. It's the equivalent of CHL there.
Yeah, it is the exact equivalent of CHL, but there's a difference from high school level hockey.
No, I'm not talking about private academies or anything. I always consider it high school in the States. Yeah.
And but also a big difference with Lane Hudson is the US NTDP, they're not actually officially part of any one league. They play a lot of
exhibitions. And when you look at elite prospects, add both of them when you go?
Yeah, they do. I
didn't know that for the longest time.
They do. Jeez. But Lane Hudson also played a lot of NCAA teams last season, right? So there is quite a big difference in the jump that Lane Hudson made in this year versus the one that Jordan Harris did going to Northeastern.
Yeah, absolutely.
Right?
Like, but regardless, high school to NCAA versus, so when we talk about Lane Hudson eclipsing, like I think only Hughes, one of them, I forget which, had better numbers as a freshman. Like right now, he's destroying Jake Sanderson's rookie year. And he's a true freshman.
Adam Fox's goal record in 12
games. He's a true freshman, too. Like, we're talking about not a redshirt. A true freshman.
Like, the only comp that beats him out right now is Quinn Hughes, but he played his draft year in the NCAA. So he was in his sophomore season in his D+1. And that season's eclipsing Hudson, but not
And I mean, Boston University, in my opinion, freshman. They're actually probably overplaying right now, like that they're not as good as the record seems. So,
no, they're not. They're not a great team.
But with Lane Hudson, you're looking at my big worry is that he loves to have the puck. And when you watch Makar go twice around the zone, I used to call that the Hossa because Marion Hossa used to do it all the time. That's super fun to watch. He won't have that kind of time in the NHL. So yes, you have to work on that. But overall, I see very few flaws in his game. And I think we're actually holding back on throwing him accolades, but statistically speaking, he's on his way to one of the best seasons in NCAA history as an 18-year-old freshman. Like
it makes me so happy because I second guessed myself so much last season because every time I watched Lane Hudson play, I was like, this is a top 15.
If you're not second guessing yourself, you shouldn't be in this industry.
No, for sure. But it was even more so for Hudson than anyone else because not a single big public scout ranked Hudson higher than 18th overall. And that was Scott Wheeler. No one else ranked him higher than 18th.
Out to Scott because he's good at this kind of stuff. But yeah.
Exactly. And so I was like, I had him at 9th overall for about a 1 month.
And that would have been such a stretch. But if he went 9th overall, people would be happy right now. They'd be like, look,
sure. Yeah. But in the end, I settled on 11 because I couldn't quite rationalize him ahead of Mintyukov and Nemets. Mm-hmm. And
but like,
but
for
even
me,
then, I was just still doubting myself because I was like, there's so many people that I respect so much in the scouting industry that don't even have him in the first round, right?
Yeah,
And not a
even
single
point I
person
hate
has him top 15. So
hockeyprospect.com,
me
which is one of
putting
my
him,
favorite places, and I don't think they even had him ranked. Like,
I was so worried that it would backfire really hard on me, but the like just the more I watched, the more confident I became in that, and this season looking even better for that. So I'm glad I stuck to my guns and put him at 11, but it was a weird season last year
Well,
because
you didn't do a McKeg and just like pick a random guy and put it out there. You had value
no.
behind. Yeah,
Yeah,
you
that
were, you
was
were.
me with you know who Sebastian. I'm forgetting his name right now.
Oh, Kirill Dolzhenkov. Good
Kirill
Yeah, we
Dolzhenkov,
all have
the giraffe.
our
The
favorite
giraffe.
guys,
The
but I
giraffe.
mean.
But for me, I caved during my rankings because at a certain point, my eye test would have had Lane Hutson at exactly 11, right ahead of Matthew Savoy,
Oh
because
God,
he was
yeah.
probably Savoy was my least favorite player in this entire draft
Same,
class.
and I was actually kind of hoping the Habs wouldn't jump on it because there is that pressure again to get. I mean, I know he's not exactly
And the
from.
fact that Buffalo drafted Savoy and Östlund, like there's a clear winner there for me.
Oh well, and
Such a good, such a
the
good.
Sabres had a great. I was speaking to them the whole time. They had a great draft too. And you know what? I don't know if I'm allowed to say this, but they had a deal in place with the Sens that would have been even better. And turns out the Senators player nixed it. So yeah, Buffalo has been doing
Wow.
good, picking up some good players. But anyways, let's get back
A
to
player had a
Hutson.
shot to leave Ottawa and didn't.
Yeah, well, I mean to go to Buffalo, but one
I
of the
mean,
things with Lane Hutson, in my opinion, is that's great is that he's not getting carried. Like this isn't a Sam Gagner and Costitin playing with Patrick Kane situation. You
no.
know what I mean? He's creating. Like for example, his first goal last night, he should have had an assist on it. The second goal, he with the follow up, he's driving the play. He sees the ice so well. He
He drives the
anticipates.
middle so much. It's
Yes.
incredible that a defenseman, not just as small, because like he's what 5'9" now. He is
Sure.
so light. He is like he's under 160 pounds, and in
Well,
the
what? Does
NCAA,
well,
properly every time.
I'll
In
say
the
this.
NCAA, he drives the
Probably
middle
weighs
every time.
140 pounds, soaking wet with nails
Yeah,
in
he's
his
tiny.
pockets.
He is tiny,
And I'm not worried about that
he
though
has all
because
those habits. No,
I.
exactly. He has all the foundational habits. And he's
Exactly.
going to add some weight with time, and he won't need to be heavy because he knows how to play his
And
weight. He can out-leverage opponents that are way heavier than him.
Exactly. Pull a Caulfield on Myers. But the biggest fear I think for a lot of teams is that it doesn't become like a Victor Mete situation where I love Mete for a lot of reasons. And for one of those years, he was actually carrying Shea Weber.
He was.
But I will say this, he struggled to clear the crease and it did lead to a lot of goals against. Now, that's a symptom of a bigger problem. However, that makes the defenseman look bad. And I think that would be probably the biggest thing I'd worry about is when the puck's in the crease, he'll have a hard time shoving guys out. But I think he'll be near the opponent's crease a lot more often than his
Yeah,
own, you
that's the
know?
thing. And as long as you put him with a partner that can fulfill that role, he's gonna be just fine. Like a pairing, if we're talking about like people that are already in the Habs system, a pairing of Lane Hutson and Caden Gooley would be so much fun. And I think
Lane
they
Hutson and
complement
Arvid
each
Jack
other.
after the chaos.
No, that'd be chaos. That'd be insane. But I think Caden Gooley, that'd be very, very fun to see just because like Caden Gooley's improved this aspect of his game so much, but it still isn't a strength. And that's his play in the breakout and in transition. Like it
Yeah,
was
everyone.
atrocious in his draft year, but it still is not a
See,
strength. But
I
he
didn't see it
had to
that way.
do it all the
I thought he was
time with
really
David
good in
Savard.
transition into WHL. Like I guess I missed the boat
Well,
on that
oh,
one, but
in his draft year, it was like all the metrics supported as well. Like it was like quite hilarious because basically the cycle. In his draft year, like he worked on a ton, especially with Edmonton last season. Like it became a strength
And he was
like
getting
by
popped at them, which
WHL
was nice too.
standards, exactly. But in his draft year, it was a constant cycle of amazing play to force a turnover in transition defense, take the puck, have 5 seconds, scan the ice, pass onto the stick of an opponent on the tape, and then repeat. And that was his entire shift over
Yeah,
and over and
you had
over.
time to file your taxes by the time he came
If
to a
there's
decision.
one player that's going
Exactly.
to make it at his size, it's him.
Well, I and
Yes. And
I'll
Xavier Simoneau.
I'll admit I was a
Zavisimo,
little
too.
I maybe underrated him in the sense that like his skating was good full stop. And that was the most exciting thing for me is when back in the day we used to say, oh, he skates well. dot, dot, dot for a big guy, you know? Yeah. But that's not the case with Caden Gooley. For a big guy, he's just an amazing skater. I think
so fluid.
I think if we weren't in a data analysis driven era, he'd be one of the front runners for the Calder Trophy right now.
Absolutely.
You know, okay.
Just the role he's been put in.
So right now he's on pace to have the most even strength points in Montreal Canadiens rookie defenseman history.
That is a fun stat.
Shot he misses it is if Jack Eye doesn't.
Well, you know, and he is on only Stéphane Rabida and PK Subban played more often as rookies. And I think they were a little older. He's on pace to have the fifth best points overall behind guys like, you know, Chilios, Lapointe, PK Subban. Like these are, I mean, I'm pretty sure those are three of the best defensemen that have ever been in the organization. So all those numbers are lining up that this guy can have a great career. His underlying numbers are disgusting. They're like a Montreal metro station
but
on Sunday
can't
morning.
Blame him.
But you look at David Savall and you say, okay, I kind of get it. So in my opinion, he's done so well by being overused. I think he's being overused right now.
Oh, 100%.
But you got to get him a partner.
Almost every defenseman has been overused this season.
Yes, yes, see, absolutely.
Savard is
except for Jordan Harris.
To watch because you're watching the slowest man with the slowest hands pull off things that he shouldn't be able to pull off.
It's kind of like when Corey Perry, when he came to Montreal, I'm like,
he's going
ball hockey speed, but like he's doing ball hockey deeks. Like it's crazy.
He's turning on the Jets, but it's Winnipeg when it was in Atlanta. Like,
yeah, exactly. So anyways, all this to say, I am pretty darn encouraged by what we're seeing in the prospect. I don't think, you know, Rohrer, we got Gaidon. There's Kapanen's actually been playing very well. I don't know if you, it's kind of hard to follow because
he's putting up good numbers in the Liga. Yeah.
Oh my God. It's very, very, very strong numbers. And he's
going to be the number one center for Finland at the World Juniors.
Yeah. Well, I don't know if you saw the warm-up tournament, but yeah, he was basically scoring goals on top. And he's also leading, I don't think they call it rookie scoring there, but it's U20 scoring in Liga.
Yeah,
so
it is.
Adam Engstrom has the confidence of a guy.
He caught my eyes immediately, not just for, oh no, it's Petteri Nurmi had the McDonald's. Either way.
Yeah.
Both of those guys, actually. Now,
and then Miguel Tourigny is the future captain of the Laval Rocket.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely.
I like that.
But I think Engstrom and Nurmi, it's unfortunate I don't get to watch them a lot, but Engstrom's playing for the top team at 18. I don't know if he got sent down recently, but it's been pretty decent when it comes to, like, and those guys aren't even in the top 10, right? The
Habs? Nurmi before the draft.
Yeah. Yeah, Nurmi and Jared Davidson were the two kind of oddball picks that the Habs made. Like,
you know,
we always knew they're going to throw a dart at a goalie.
Overagers have become, like, yeah.
For sure. It's just, there were a lot of overagers that I would have swung on
that were Jared Davidson.
A million years ahead of either
it
one
almost
of those.
Like, feels like Davidson, they looked at his numbers rather than watching tape.
I got into a fight about it on Twitter.
You did.
It was like one of the funniest
with the Seattle fan, right? It was Thunderbirds fan.
Well, and I do these power rankings on Montreal Hockey now, which is so fun to do, and it's actually been difficult this year, which I love. But people are like, why are you adding Davidson? Hey, listen, he's 20 years old. Like Sean Farrell's the same age, and he's putting up more than a point per game in the NCAA, and he lost. Yeah. You know, so and he got stuck in the USHL for an extra year. So I mean, those 2 years in difference in development is gigantic, but I get why they go for overagers. I don't love it. The Leafs have been going for overagers a lot. I don't love the idea. I'll be perfectly honest.
They need bottom six players right now.
There is a market for undervalued overagers.
Yes, but why don't you bring them to camp, see if they're good, sign them immediately, and then just let it slide, if you know what I mean? Like,
well, because they're not eligible to like often the overagers are also like 19, right? Like 1 year over.
Okay,
at that point, they're
not
19.
Okay, 19 I don't consider, but yeah, the 20-year-olds. But Davidson.
Yeah, 20-year-olds is a different. Like, I can think of two 20-year-olds that I would still be banging the table to draft. Lucas Gustafsson and Yuri Tkachuk. No, Stonehouse is still 19. Stonehouse? Yeah. Stonehouse was basically the same age as Vincent.
That being
Moore.
Said, look at the 18-year-old. Okay, so just from this draft, right, you have obviously Slafkovský, and then you have Lane Hudson, 18-year-old, Owen Beck, 18-year-old, Cédric Gaidon. Yeah. We don't talk about Cédric Gaidon enough, let's be perfect.
He's so smart. He's a very, very intelligent.
Franco Ontarians represent. I'm a big fan of him. So shout out to Rockland. Vincent Rohr. I mean,
Vincent Rohr. German, the Austrian boy. I can do the German names.
Did you guys ever watch 30 Rock?
One of my friends wanted me to for.
Anyways, there's a joke called the Rumor Juror, and that's I want to get these their names right because I think it's so important. You know, you come over to Canada, you lose almost all your identity, but you have your name, right? So I hate when people make fun of their names.
I'm German. I'm half German. I speak fluently. I struggle with Roar.
You speak fluently?
Yeah.
You didn't know that? Yeah.
How did I not know that about you?
And then
fun fact.
I speak Mandarin, if you want to, Wosher, Buhao, Zhenghao. But the thing is, when we're seeing right now is that the Habs did a lot of home runs on 18-year-olds, I think. Well, like potential home runs. We're talking about Vincent Roar. He's what, 26?
He was the youngest player.
Was he? Roar was the youngest player in the entire... Slafkovsky's in the NHL. The youngest
Roar
guy in the
was
NHL.
The youngest player that I ranked on my draft list. I'm not sure if a team went like off the board on a guy that was like a couple days younger, but the cutoff is September 15th and Roar is September 9th.
I remember thinking
he's 6 days off the cutoff.
I remember thinking Roar, Engstrom, and Davidson were bad picks, but I guess
Roar, I
because there were other people available there, you know.
Roar exactly. Was going to be a Hab. Like something about everything told everybody.
I knew it.
And by the way, if you didn't take Hudson at 62, we would have taken Roar at 62. We would have taken Roar at 33.
Like, I may or may not have had some kind of inside info on that. I knew that Roar was going to be a Hab, but I was skeptical about it because the first time I heard that was going to be a likely scenario was in like April, and I was like, I can see why, because he is so young, and there are interesting skills here, but
and he's smart. That's so important.
Smart. Yeah, for sure.
Intelligence, in my opinion,
there's a real lack of cohesion in his game, and then this season he comes out
if
of the
he
gate.
Can improve his game over the summer, and he did.
That's the thing. I was like, he can make me look like an absolute idiot if he.
I love it when they do that. I love it when
they
do
like,
that.
And then I look like a dumbass now.
But
so
going back to
it, it's
okay.
Great.
I mean, yeah, the 67s are strong, but you look at Beck and Roar. These are guys that were under a point per game on their draft year, and
oh, for sure, yeah.
Like there's
Beck
no guarantee.
Beck is still the 2C in Mississauga.
Yeah, exactly. So well, I mean, I think he actually started last game as the 1C over Columbus boys. So.
Del Bell Blues.
Yeah, who I don't know if his skills will translate. You know,
he's an awful skater who
and if he wasn't in the picture, then obviously, you know, Beck would have got more points. But all this to say is the Habs really looked past the hockey DB of it all in this draft. And
then Jared Davidson happened.
but for
the most part, for sure, right? And I mean, Vincent Roar has been tremendous this year. I mean, I've gotten to watch him
like
for over
we're
10
not even talking about
year.
Philippe Mechard, who or like I'll be honest. I am kind of disappointed with the lack of offense lately. Now, Kitchener's bad. Kitchener's so bad.
Kitchener's a really painful team.
But
and
that being said, I mean, 6 goals in 14 games, I did expect more, and I feel like it's almost unfair. But he's not even – he's, what, the 7th or 8th most exciting prospect right now? Like, that speaks
to
that.
Oh, no, he's still up there.
Because of how well the prospects have been doing.
Exactly. Like, sorry, I'm talking about in a power rankings because when I talk about my power rankings – it's not like, yes, obviously, I think Sean Farrell is going to bring more value eventually than Riley Kidney. I'll be perfectly honest. But right now, Philippe Mechard, I think I have him ranked 7th or 8th, which, yeah, a little disappointing, but it speaks to the depth of the Canadians. You know,
every time I do an armchair GM on Cap Friendly, Riley Kidney is the first prospect to go.
Me too.
I get it.
Struggle with
I feel
I
like
really,
we, all,
really struggle
we
with him.
All see the same stuff. And there's that really big risk that, you know, he's really just getting QJMHL points, but
it's not that for me. Cause like, again, like there are good
and
the
Sitar are bad too. We have to keep that in mind.
Sitar
are bad. And this kid is like 15 points clear.
Yeah,
the second guy.
I know, for sure. The numbers are great. The skill is there. He is also purely a perimeter playmaker. He does not access the middle ever.
No.
And that's
not an NHL player.
Not fly in the NHL. You have to be tremendously skilled.
I'll tell you right
now,
in the NHL. Riley Kidney, they're not even considering him being a center. Like, yeah, it's great that he's playing.
But even as a winger, if you're restricted to playing on the perimeter and you have virtually no value in board play, that is a very, very difficult thing to make work.
Absolutely. But I mean, come on, man. We are all looking at Joshua Roy, who, again, that's just a take advantage
of
great market inefficiency.
But Joshua Roy has the hockey IQ to to find open space.
Kinney's having a better season on a much, much worse team. Trey, I just want to put it out there.
I wouldn't say it's better.
And also,
season. It's better production. And for me, those are two very different things.
Watch for Kinney to be traded to Sherbrooke. I have a sense that's going to happen. Wouldn't that be great?
A Kinney is the one prospect in the Habs pool that I would be shopping because I know that a lot of teams are extremely high on him.
Yeah.
And I can see reasons why, but there are enough red flags there where I would want to just.
So you're taking advantage of the fact that no one can actually tell that it might not be for real. Yeah, I think there is value to do that to get rid of players, you know. But his draft plus two guys, his draft plus two has been very good. Let's be perfectly honest. Like,
but the Habs have so many prospects that kind of fill similar roles, right? Like,
if I'm getting used, Joshua Rod's on the block.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, remember when we were talking about Jan Michak being excited? He's fallen off. He's not even in the starting lineup in Laval. So
no, exactly.
No. Like, for example, okay, I have it listed right now as like my power rankings. I have Hudson first, obviously. Beck was first for a while, but you know, Hudson's second. Then I have Kinney, Roy, just because their last 2 weeks, I mean, they were great. They're like
the production is
Roy's 5-point game against the Hapoel was just great to see because I feel like he's had a sleepy season. Then I have Sean Farrell at five because I know he's a bit older, but we're looking.
I adore Sean Farrell. I audibly cheer
and he's a special
him.
Teams magician. Now all of a sudden, like
I adore Sean Farrell. For me, he is in. If you give me the choice to keep either him or Owen Beck in our organization, I'd really struggle with that decision. I would personally very much struggle.
I would not.
I know it's not a popular take. But I stand by that. The ceiling for Sean Farrell is legitimately a complimentary first line winger, and I don't think Owen Beck has first line potential in any universe.
No, but I would say this: 99 out of 100 coaches would rather Beck in their line.
Oh no, for sure. No, I'm not saying that like it's necessarily what will happen.
But then
I'm just saying, like, if I were like a GM of a team and I had those two players and I had actual control over how they'd be utilized within the organization, I would struggle.
Oh, fair enough. And I mean, what we're seeing is it's not like Harvard's a power franchise or anything, and he's scoring shorthanded goals. No, it's been very encouraging. But just to think that a guy like Sean Farrell is fifth on my list, I'm like, oh, okay, we're starting to, you know, okay, what about Oliver Kapanen at six? Do you guys agree with that? Ahead of Roar, ahead of Meshaw, ahead of Gaydon.
I would disagree on that one. I mean, look, he was a bit younger for his draft.
He's half a point per game in Liga. That's great.
No, it's not.
It really is.
Now, what is he? 21? 22?
No.
He's 19. He's 19.
Yeah, he's leading all you 20 points. Yeah. Okay, historically, I know what you're saying, Seb. It's not as good as some historic players, but his improvement from last year to this year, I think, has been like.
It's more of a thing of he was behind last year and he's caught up to where he probably should be this year.
Fair enough.
I don't think he's exactly surpassed.
Well, then maybe it's I'm just being harsh towards Meshaw, but I have Rohrer over Meshaw right now in my power rankings.
Well, because Rohrer's having a tremendous season. He's been more impactful to his team than Meshaw
and
has.
And
Meshaw has the hurdle of having to adapt to the North American game.
And also,
right?
He had 3 points in three games, and I dropped him. Like, you know, that's why it's been so hard. Like, you have a guy like Cedric Guindon, I have him at ninth. You know, that he has 29 points in 20 games. You know, like, that's pretty impressive. Then you have guys like Simoneau, and I mean, Anthony Richard, I know he's 25, but he's leading the AHL in goals.
Adam Engstrom. A monster.
When you mentioned Adam Engstrom, I was like, yes, because that was the guy that caught my attention. What I love doing at development camp, at rookie camp, is I put away the paper and I start looking like, okay, who's number 24? Because he's damn good. I like that. Kind of get rid of all the preconceptions. And Engstrom, if you didn't know him, and Owen Beck, you'd say these guys are NHL veterans.
So what happened for me was, that's exactly how I scout. And I was watching some Matvey Michkov. And there was a player that caught my eye. And I watched the entire game, mostly watching him. His Elite Prospects page. No picture, no weight, no height. Just a name. He's on a professional tryout in the VHL.
Sure.
He is like my favorite player ever now. I don't even remember his name.
No, absolutely.
I just want to kind of say one thing. If you want one thing to compare Marc Bergevin and Kent Hughes with picks 30, 31, 63, and 64 in 2021, we got Logan Mailloux, Riley Kidney, and Oliver Kapanen. in with picks
Hudson Beck Rohrer.
Yeah, exactly.
But Meshar
33, 62.
Well, yeah, well, no, yeah. I was going into the seconds. Third. I was going okay, Rohrer as a second, but yeah.
Which one do you take? Like,
yeah, it's fine either way.
Yeah, no. I mean, this draft class has been, and I didn't really, I'll be honest, I didn't investigate much because I found it was actually pretty boring overall, the draft class, but it could end up being like one of those foundation makers for the Habs, and not necessarily because of top end talent, but it's just the kind of guys that you're going to use for, you know, if they hit, you're going to use them for a very, like, very long time.
Can this draft be our 2017 Dallas Stars draft?
No.
Where we get somebody in every position.
No. I mean, let's be honest. This is so harsh. I don't think either Joshua or Riley Kidney will make an impact in the NHL.
I absolutely agree, and we should trade Hunt
on. I would tend to agree on that one as well. I think Joshua Hua.
I don't know what it is about him.
His ceiling to me is a very
third line scoring winger,
useful third line winger.
But he doesn't have that defensive acumen or
yeah, like. But we're evolving past a time where the third line is the quintessential shutdown line.
Oh, no, I agree.
To play that role, it's more, he's very intelligent in his offensive zone.
The coaches won't trust him if he can't play defense, right? Like, that's the other part of it.
But he's an intense forechecker. He has those things that can gain coaches trust.
And for a while this year, we're seeing him with Gill and Gauthier, I believe, right?
Yeah.
Man, like, that was by far the best line in the CHL for the first month of action, right?
If we turn pick 150 into something real, that's the win.
Well, and that exactly, Aaron, when you're talking about that.
No, exactly.
You know how we're so hyped about prospects? I really think that teams should start taking advantage of the mystery box factor, right? So if you have a guy like Riley Kidney, for example, he'd be a pretty good example. And Riley, if you're listening, sorry, bud. I'm sorry that we're using you. I defended you. But, you know, right now, it's all flowers. It's all like, look at his points. He's getting better, blah, blah, blah. And that's the second that he doesn't make the team the next year, doesn't take the next step, you lose all value. So I'd be a little more active in trading these prospects.
I would agree.
Because like, now the
danger there.
Use the hype, right?
Like, exactly. But the danger is then like trading a guy and then getting clowned on from moving on them early. However,
like Kirby
the potential upside, of doing that is so high because we see so many players get so hyped before they
and they'll come out of Team Canada if they make Team Canada.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like, woo!
Yeah.
You know what's crazy to me is that
and
Riley Kidney
have high trade value.
Riley Kidney and Joshua Roy are considered locks for Team Canada, and Owen Beck isn't. Like, in what world do we live in?
Well, in a world where points are overvalued. And
well,
where,
even then,
where,
okay, I'm going to say this.
Comparisons
I agree, but
between the OHL and the QMJHL aren't valued enough.
What's the name of the guy that's playing for Getsnoa that was a first rounder?
Please tell me no. No, I mean, he's supposed to
be. Maverick
Lamoureux. What? For Getsnoa Warren? Like, I went to the Getsnoa games last year. So it was Warren and Luneau were the two big ones.
Okay.
Both got picked by Anaheim.
Okay, yeah, no, then it was the year before. He's a 2021er.
Zachary Dean. Yes. I love him. He's great. Vegas.
Sure. Now look at his production right now and tell me that he deserves it more than Owen Beck. Like, that's
no,
the thing. Like,
no, I'm not saying he does, but it is a case where if we're talking about production and that reflecting the quality of player, mm-hmm. it's a very interesting case because he's producing far, far less than Riley Kidney and Joshua Roy, but mm-hmm. in my opinion,
I would take him
prospect.
With, oh yeah, absolutely.
I would trade both Roy and Kidney for Dean in a heartbeat.
Oh, absolutely.
Despite
tossing Caden Primo. What you want to avoid is it becoming a Caden Primo situation where kind of people figure out that, you know, the luster has been lost because obviously, you know, the Habs did that with what, all their first round picks?
Yes.
Like literally all of them. So, and the only one they hit on, they traded it away. But I get it because GMs, you know, when we're all in keeper leagues, we love our prospects. Like they're the best players ever. But it's a good time to, I believe that's another market inefficiency is the hype around these guys. So when Roy and Kidney come off a good gold medal performance, maybe you test the waters a little bit and see what's there. Because the Habs,
look,
they have to consolidate their rookies,
package,
right? There's too many prospects.
If you can package those two and get a 2023 first round draft pick, you do it. You just do.
Oh, my God.
Oh, absolutely.
Oh, God. I don't know. That would be
but
a steal.
Like, if I'm seeing next year, they're both out of the CHL, right? Do they have one more year?
I think
they have one more year.
Can go back. No, Roy's that. Oh, actually.
Or is
Roy
done? No, Roy was young. Roy was very young for his draft.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. But I mean, I think that they came very close to sending him to
exactly
like, at 20 like, there. Juan has nothing left eligible, to learn in the queue.
But he's gonna go to the AHL or ECHL next
because
year.
Because I don't think Kidney can play in the AHL.
No, he can't.
If
Jan Mišák can't, there's no way that he now, can I'll say this, at the same age.
And hi, Jan. You're one of my favorite guys. But I will say Riley Kidney can process the game a lot faster than Jan Mišák. And I think that's very important.
The way he plays along the boards, he's going to get crushed.
However, if we're talking about projectability to just playing, just getting by in the AHL, what's more important than processing speed is – being able to play in the middle of the ice, right?
No, absolutely.
Like to play a fourth line AHL role, we're not at the level of saying, oh, this is where processing speed is going to be the death of you just yet, right?
Like, absolutely.
Like now, the AHL for me is the place where Curtis Douglas lives in Tucson, Arizona, and he will be on a rampage to hurt as many people as he can.
Yeah, it's less of a goon league than it used to be, but there's still like I remember talking to who was it the first round? It was Noah Jolson. Who, I mean, that's such a tragic story what happened there. And I think, anyways, like the double concussion, broken orbital bone, horrible. All that being said is he told me, he's like, yeah, man, guys come up right up to me. And like they hit me a lot harder because I'm a first round pick. Like you legitimately get picked on when you're high end talent in the AHL. And Joshua Roy wasn't. He was a fifth round pick because they all thought he was lazy. He was lazy, but he was also 16 years old. So, you know,
and then he started taking it seriously. So
yeah, like who among us? To me, that actually shows a lot more than a guy that's just always had. Yeah. But
I'm a lazy 17 year old.
But you go into the OHL. By the way, everyone's a lazy 17 year old. If you're not, you're a cop. But the thing is with Roy is he has that. I just, you know, a couple of years ago, maybe even this year, I led the whole league in scoring 120 points. Guys will be going right after him. So it'll make life on them a little more difficult.
Played on the first line with Connor Bedard at the World Juniors, right? Like you have a lot of hype surrounding that.
But sure. And he was terrible at camp. It was really weird. Like
he had a very weak camp.
I don't know what it is, but something's off with his overall game, and I just can't quite put my finger on it because
I'm pretty sure it's the defensive effort.
Well, it's
almost also a lack of high end skill.
Yes, okay, he doesn't have
any real
that works fine for him in juniors.
Yeah, exactly. So it's not translatable. But I almost call it like the Marc-André Fleury effect. Is that from one minute to another, you can think this is the best goalie in the world to why the heck is he in the NHL type of thing. So that almost applies to Roy. I'm looking at him in the queue, and I'm like, geez, that was a great play. And then for the rest of the game, I didn't see you. You were making bad line shifts. You were staying, you know, I don't know. He's really
confusing. Him and it's Jordan Dumé for me. You could have a
Dumé is the comparison there for sure.
Oh, yeah. Like, I mean, I think Dumé would be better, but
I am a notable Jordan Dumé denier because the points are so secondary to me to what he's actually doing. But just for Joshua, he had the one game I watched of him this season, I think he had 3 points, and I barely noticed him. And he had a goal.
Well, that's the other part, too, because I was trying to get a read. Who was it that gave me that read on on Gauthier? But it was you. It was you, Seb. But I see him with his quality of teammates, and I just would like to see him over his point pace last year. And maybe that's harsh, but you're on one of the strongest teams, not just in the queue. I think they're top 10. Like, it's what, Winnipeg, Quebec, and then you can probably throw Sherbrooke right up there. You're on one of the strongest teams. You're going to go on a Memorial Cup run, hopefully, ideally. That's their game plan. You're surrounded by guys that will go in the first round. I don't know, man. I really was hoping to see more out of him.
He's being leapfrogged by a lot of people on my board.
Well, okay, that was my whole point. Thank you, Sebastian. Okay, so when you're looking at this list, all these guys that are 18 have been leapfrogging guys that are older from them from 1 or 2 years ago, and that's why I'm so excited about this draft year. You know what I mean? Like, yes, new toys, but the 18-year-olds are dunking on the 19 and 20-year-olds, and that's fun to see.
For sure. But also, Gauthier, like, he's just being leapfrogged on my draft board this season as well. Like,
he's not on my first name yet.
Well, yeah, when Mark asked me, what was it, a month ago or so?
Time has lost all meaning. I don't know.
Yeah, but a little while ago, you'd asked me like what my read on Gauthier
because he caught my attention every time I was looking at Roy. I'm like, I was looking at Gauthier
for sure because he is also quite a unique prototype of a player for the QMJHL, right? And as why that stands out more does not actually give him more NHL value, right? Which is like
see, for me,
a difficult thing to actually get to catch on to. But he's been leapfrogged by so many players for me. So right now he's falling into my 50 range of the draft, so mid second round.
Yeah, it's almost
because there's a lot of players that have far more tangible skill and value. So like Aaron, and I'm a player that you adore, that is one of the guys that leapfrog could see on my board, is an OHL player, Denver Barkey. Like,
I love Devin Barkey.
I know you do. I know you love Barkey. This is a London Knight.
17th overall for me.
Very skilled, very intense, very fun. But there's a far more tangible skill and projectable elements to that game to be an impact player than with an Ethan Gauthier, who I think, if he pans out, is a third liner. Denver Barkey has actual second line potential.
Ethan Gauthier and Cam Allen, it's not for what they have done. It's for what they haven't.
Yeah,
they're dropping because of that. I mean, Cam Allen has been pretty bad.
No, well, Cam Allen has like this has been something that we haven't actually seen by a prospect. I mean, okay, sorry, we saw it 2 years ago, but with Atu Ratu. But Cam Allen was being really hyped up as a top 10 talent. I know at Dauber we ranked him 10th overall, which I wasn't a big fan of back in September. Even
everything I'm tooling is he's 47.
Yeah, I can't rationalize having him in my first round right now. Every time I watch him, I get frustrated with decisions he's making.
And also it's a great first round, let's be honest. Like, this is such a good one to have multiples in.
This is not the 2022 draft either.
No.
But even 2022, I don't know if he'd crack my first round, because there's Cam Allen has some very interesting tools. But the decision making is just consistently frustrating.
And that's why intelligence is so important now. That's why you're putting such a focus on intelligence.
To become an impactful NHL player, unless you have legitimately.
Unless you can process information on the fly, then you're pretty
the game
useless.
Is so fast.
Yeah.
You don't need to be fast, but you need to think fast.
Exactly.
Yes, if you don't think fast, you're not going to stick.
No, exactly.
And that's a key thing in scouting, for sure.
Who's just David Savard is the epitome of a player. That
he's got skills.
Sense to me.
He's got skills. But he has one skill. I'll say this right
now.
But every 12 games he becomes Bobby Orr, and that's pretty cool. But
I mean, for one skill move, it's always.
What was the name of the guy that the Habs got though instead of Savard at that point? What was his name?
Let's not forget, Savard was traded for a first and a third.
My goodness, yeah. Well, at one point, so was I was going to start talking.
Ben Sherratt.
Yeah, that was the best trade ever. No, the Habs brought in a guy. I'm going to look it up. Montreal Canadiens DB. The year they were actually going for Savard, and then they signed some defenseman that was with New Jersey, and now he's with...
Douglas Murray?
No, not Douglas
Murray. Now he's with who?
We're not going that far back. Yeah, actually, I don't have the answer for that. Was it...
Do you know what team he's on?
He was like a Drewski-style player where he just had really good underlying numbers.
Oh, and, is this the guy who got traded for Jordy Benn? Are we talking?
Yeah, I think so. Anyways,
yeah,
his numbers, all in all, it was so crazy because he actually had way better, and he had a really rough time in Montreal, like really rough, I'll admit. But I would have gone signed him for 5 years rather than Savard, and it just goes to show name recognition is a huge red flag in a lot of these cases, because we talk about Savard's great, like he's been fantastic blocking shots. I understand that. But
Greg Patterin?
No, but Greg Patterin's wife did once.
I know.
Actually, she went after Scott, and I become like a mama bear when my writers get attacked. And then she said something really mean about francophones. It was like, ooh, like lady.
Yeah, I remember
anyways,
that.
David Savard,
those
it's
screenshots.
Great that he's blocking so many shots, but at a certain point, why do you have to block so many shots?
Yeah.
Well, it's the idea, like I'm sure you guys know the Kent Wilson quote, which is just Kent is a good friend of mine. And, you know, killing rats is better than not. But eventually, you know, when you keep killing rats all year long, you have to figure out you got a rat problem. You know, you got something. There's a bigger thing at play. So
and David Savard carried Sebastian Fantasy for a couple of weeks. So
there you dropped him for Mo Sider. Yeah.
And when you look at Savard, statistically speaking, yeah, he's blocking a lot of shots because no other defenseman in the entire NHL allows more shots when he's on the ice on the power. Exactly. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
So again, name recognition is big, and I understand all that. But at this point, but to get back to the Habs, hey man, I wouldn't even hesitate to trade Savard if you get a taker. I think you want to keep him over Edmondson, but I'm keeping Chris Weidman on this lineup. I in this lineup, I know everyone doesn't like him, but He's been good with Jack Eye. He can't shoot worth a darn on the power play.
No.
He just doesn't. But Chris Weidman has been sneaky efficient for the Montreal Canadiens.
And before we jump into the final segment of this episode, we have a little ad read to get through.
The Canadiens have been incredibly surprising this season. How do you think their season will end up? If you want to bet on it, DraftKings Sportsbook is the place to do it. Hockey fans, light the lamp this winter with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL. New customers can bet just $5 pregame money line on any NHL team to win their game and get $150 in free bets if they do. If that wasn't enough excitement, you can turn small bets into bigger payouts with same-game parlays. Combine multiple bets, like which team will win, how many goals will be scored, and more for your shot at an even bigger payout. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now, use code THPN, bet $5 on any NHL team to win their game, and get $150 in free bets if they do. Only at DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. Minimum age and eligibility restrictions apply. See show notes for details. I got it.
That was a good ad read.
Got through it. Beautiful ad read. And on that note, the final segment of
Shane Wright just scored his second goal. Yay.
Of course he did, because he's very good.
He's a very good player. Yeah.
But for the final segment, we wanted to just kind of hand the mic over to Mark, which we definitely haven't done at all so far.
No, I haven't been speaking much. That's the biggest problem with me is I don't talk a lot.
I'm sure you get that all the time. but we just wanted to let you share any stories you wanted to share. In your history of following the Habs and even working with the team?
You know, there's one thing that happened to me that, I don't know, I thought it was pretty darn cool, but the day that, everything went really well with the Habs, but the day we split up, I was like, okay, when I walk by, there's a bunch of statues, and when I walk by the Jean Béliveau statue, I have a little bit of a routine, and it was about 10 o'clock at night, and there was a man there that was just kind of, you know, just standing around, and he saw me do my thing. He's like, okay, toi t'aimes le gros Bill. So in French, you like gros Bill, which is Jean Béliveau's name. And he immediately opened up and said, you know, I come to this statue because my wife, you know, who's passed away, it was our favorite player. And when I think about him, I think about all the great memories that I built, you know, around the Montreal Canadiens. So just, and that was actually when I was no longer employed, like literally the day of, but I thought it was so fantastic that every single time I went out into the crowd, someone had some sort of link, an important link off the ice to the Montreal Canadiens. Even just the stories about Guy Lafleur, you know, getting to talk to guys like Yvan Cournoyer. It's, you know, at one point I was in the middle of I was sponsored and all that, but I look up and there's Guy Carbonneau, Vincent Danfoss, and Patrice Brisebois, which maybe not big names to other people, but when I was a kid, they were winning Stanley Cups. Like that's, it's crazy to me that I was ending up, you know, talking with this guy, with these guys. I felt like such an imposter. But overall, the coolest things, other than the cup run, I have to admit that was cool, was seeing the families and how important it was to take care of families. And this, like, NHL players won't just go to a team anymore just because of money. First of all, they check with their girlfriends or their wives, because those are the ones that run the show. And just seeing the kids run up, because this was during the COVID era as well. They hadn't been able to see Daddy in a while. They were gone to Toronto, and to me, I don't want to say who it is and whatnot, because they were kind of like private moments, but that I found was a really cool way to humanize what oftentimes becomes, you know, just a big commercial mess, right, with hockey. Like, we have to go back to the fact that these people do it because they love it, and the families take a bit of a hit, and you kind of saw that all coming in, you know, during the COVID year, because even everyone complains about what Jeff Petrie went through. I'm going to tell you right now, I was living away from my family in a different city while I had family members that were sick that I couldn't get to. And you know what? It was tearing me up inside. So I get why he went through that. You kind of get a better appreciation for the non-statistical things. And I think that was a bit of an education on my part, is understanding that when it comes down to building a healthy locker room or just players, there's the human value. And I know this might sound silly, but is maybe one of the most important things you can do is getting good people on your team. And I'm a big believer of taking care of good people. And I'll tell you right now, there's a lot of really good people that work for the Montreal Canadiens. And we were just lucky to be just getting a glimpse of these people's lives. Like, they felt so open And when I go back to that story about Jean Béliveau, I felt like it actually put a huge smile on my face. You know, I'm like, cool. I'm no longer working with my childhood dream team. But the fact that he wanted to share that with me, I felt so privileged just to get that little glimpse into his eyes. And then I kind of pictured him and his wife watching, you know, Jean Béliveau for Les Québec House. And I don't know, it was stuff like that that really touched me more than what was happening on the ice. It's the cultural phenomenon that is the Montreal Canadiens. That, yes, we all know it's big, but like little decisions that I was making was impacting the team, right? If I wrote one wrong letter, that was a big deal. So all in all, I realized that I will never work for another NHL team, that I know for sure. I'll be perfectly honest. I actually have to give the Habs props for giving me a chance, because that was way out of their wheelhouse, right? Like I did do great work for them. I'm going to say it right now, but they did take a bit of a risk there. So all in all, it was a fun experience. It was a frustrating experience, very frustrating experience. Again, I'm not big on waiting for things. I like to get stuff done right away. But when you're in a big company, that's kind of how it goes. So it was a learning experience. It was some of the best, most enjoyable time. At one point during the playoff run, me and my producer, we were having so much fun. Like, me and her were just smiling the whole time. It didn't feel like work. That changed real quick afterwards. So there was as many frustrating times as fun times, but it's an experience that I'll cherish for a long time, mostly because of the fans. And it's always been my focus. And I feel like the media doesn't do a great job about this, and neither do the teams, but respect the fans. Stop insulting the fans. Yeah, there's a lot of meatheads out there. I get it. But they are the lifeline of our careers. You know what I mean? Like, and I know we talk about a lot saying that fans are important, but no. Like, they are crucial to me, to you guys, to everyone that's writing, to everyone that has jobs in hockey. So I was really lucky to kind of get a bit of a glimpse of how the Montreal Canadiens affected just generations upon generations upon generations. I was at the Guy Lafleur Memorial, and I, you know, I had my Habs tag on, and just the amount of stories I got within a few minutes, people were lining me up to tell me their stories about Guy Lafleur. Like, that to me is a oral history of the, not just the Canadians, the culture of Quebec. And I was just so lucky to be put in a position to kind of absorb some of that. Yeah. Sorry, I went on and on there. I kind of got on a little bit of a tangent, but
that was beautiful.
That was exactly what we were looking for.
Yeah. Good.
We're
yeah.
so happy that we got a glimpse into a guy that got a glimpse.
Yeah. There you go. Well, I mean, it was still pretty cool. Like, my office, literally, I'd take one door and I'm in the Bell Center. You know what I mean? I got to, when Yvan Cournoyer at one point came in the elevator, it was Yvan Cournoyer and what was the name of the, there was another like Five Cup winner, white hair. Anyways. And,
there can be any of them.
Yeah, right. I looked at him and I had already interviewed him for a podcast. And I'll tell you right now, Yvan Cournoyer is sharp as a tack. Like, he's still sharp as a tack. And to me, he's the last living legend. We lost the trinity of the Montreal Canadiens. When you lose, you know, Le Père, Le Fils, et Le Saint-Esprit, you're talking about Béliveau, Richard, and Lafleur. But Cournoyer, I say, oh, these are, I'm like, oh, we go to level two, because that's where the legends go. And then he turns around and he's like, but Mark, you're not getting off at level two. And I was like, oh man, like, that's cool. That's cool that this guy who was on the ice for Canada's, you know, big goal for 72, that has so many cups, is, you know, just knows who I am. I thought it just blew my mind that I was in a position to do that. So all in all, I was pretty darn lucky to have that opportunity. I didn't train in marketing. I haven't taken an English class since 10th grade French high school. You know, so like, this was all kind of a learning curve for me, and it was rough. Like I say, it was very frustrating, but just the opportunity to tap into that strong heritage. And I know I'm repeating myself, but the Habs are Quebec in a sense. And yes, I know that makes people feel alienated when you're not in Quebec, but it's such an important, crucial part, fabric of the culture in Quebec. And I'm just really lucky that I, you know, as an Ontario boy, that I got to be part of that, a voice of that. And, you know, it's something that I miss a lot. I don't miss the whole process of being there, and just, anyways, I don't want to get into the bad stuff, but I really do miss being a Brown, you know, seeing those flashes of greatness, and they're honest flashes. These aren't recorded. These are just little moments that, you know, that basically I'll appreciate forever. I mean, Patrick Roy has done some bad stuff as a person, but as a goalie growing up, like, he was my boy. He was the guy who got me you know, I love Mats Naslund because he was a little guy, but Patrick Roy really made me fall in love with hockey. And, you know, just the idea of like, hey, by the way, Patrick Roy is going to call you at 2 o'clock and you're going to talk about, actually, I can't tell you what we were talking about because it never happened. But anyways, you know, to me, that was just mind blowing, you know, so I'm very, very lucky and privileged, but anyone that works in this sport is privileged. And the one thing that frustrates me the most is when you have media members complaining about little things. Listen, I'm sorry they don't have any Diet Coke for you, but this family over there saved up for a year to get 4 tickets for their kids to come watch one game. Like, please be appreciative of the fact that you're in such a privileged situation that you get paid money to cover a game. That's literally what it is. I'm not taking anything away from hockey, but it is a game. So I'd like to see a little more acknowledgement of how privileged we are working in this industry, because it's a dream come true, man. It's a dream come true, and we're really lucky to be here.
Yeah, for sure. Like I know last year, I got to watch a few Gatineau Olympic games from like the scouting box, and I was just giddy. Like it was just it was just an experience, right? Like just like at that point, I wasn't even like a full blown scout or anything yet. Like I was fully independent. I had 200 Twitter followers. Like I was a nobody a year ago.
I still in have terms 200 of, Twitter followers.
Public,
but reach. I mean,
but I got to sit in the scouting box next to NHL Central Scouts. A few. I think there's a Washington scout there, a Detroit scout. Trevor Timmons was 10 feet away, right?
And like, never feel like you're not okay. One of the big things that a lot of people ask me, how do you break into the industry? I'll be honest, you just write, you're right, you go. Yeah, you throw a lot of crap at the wall, you see what sticks. But never think that you're not good enough. There's one of the biggest things that I've had to deal with is imposter, you know, the imposter syndrome. And I still have it to this day, even though. Like I get very little criticism, but give it a go, because you know all the people on TV that you see and you're like, oh, I could do that. Yeah, you could. You absolutely could do that. So never hesitate to take that next step. And I try to encourage everyone. Like that's why I'm an old, by the way. Like I how do I put this? The Challenger shuttle hadn't exploded when I was born. So, you know, I'm loving seeing this new generation of analysts that have a better understanding of the game itself, but also they're conscientious of the morality that should be upheld in the NHL. And it's just really, really encouraging to see, because if we're being perfectly honest, the media landscape around hockey has been pretty stale for a long time, and they really have been letting a lot of things go. So I'm hoping that there will be more guys like you coming up and women too. Like, listen, that's the other part too.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, for example, Emilia Maguire and Florence.
Yes.
Like, there's so many.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
Lauren
yeah.
Kelly, who does it. Like, there's so Shayna. Yeah,
there's so many.
Owen Beck and Lauren Kelly.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Like,
like Lauren Kelly is also like a full blown scout for EP, but there's also just so many like women fans that are just commenting on the game, saying things 10 times smarter than most TV analysts.
Now
are,
I did a project where, okay, I can get away with anything on Twitter, cause I kind of play the greater fool, right? Like that's my role.
Yes.
But I handed my Twitter account over to a woman colleague of mine for a week and no one noticed. No one said anything. I'm just saying. Like,
yeah,
it's,
exactly.
So, and one of the biggest issues a lot of people ask me, you know, for example, Eyes on the Prize. I think a lot of you guys are familiar with Eyes on the Prize. When I took over my first goal, obviously, we're going to talk about women's hockey and we're going to talk about European. Like, no one was scouting Europe. But then we headhunted. We actually went and asked women, like, hey, we understand this is a disgusting industry and that's our fault. The reason people aren't applying is because we made it very unfriendly, right? So, building a comfortable area, and I know a lot of people will be rolling their eyes right now, but is the only way we're going to better our industry. And that is including obviously people of color and you know, women. And when you talk about diversity, you can't just be gender diversity, right? So hockey in general, we need to do a better job attracting the high-end talent. And it is something that we haven't done very well, but I'm seeing it on the horizon. Like it feels like there's a big movement in terms of media, in terms of what's important. And I can't wait to see where it goes, man. Cause I'll be honest, hockey coverage, it's just okay in this country. It's just okay.
Yeah, for sure. And I think on that note, we're gonna slowly wrap up.
As I trash all the media, eh? Like that's
yeah, you know, just nice. I mean, look, it ended with hope for the future. I think that's a pretty solid note to end.
I cried a little bit, like
no, yeah, well, Aaron shed a few tears.
Good, because I'm actually looking at the Big Shiny Tunes playlist right now. So sorry, I wasn't paying attention. It's a question on Twitter, you'll see. But honestly, there are a lot of good people in hockey, but there are even better people waiting in the wings. And that's really exciting. Just to don't hesitate to try. If there's anyone listening right now, whether you're a guy or a girl or a person of color, you can. Oh, I had to shut down my DMs because I was getting harassed, but I will open them up soon enough. And listen, send me a message if you want any help, anything I can give you, any, whether it's a podcast, I can bring you on my podcast, I can just give you kind of an idea of how it all works, how you can get started. Don't hesitate, reach out to me. I will gladly help you, because hockey deserves intelligent coverage.
Yeah, for sure. And I think that we can echo the exact same thing here with our podcast. I don't believe we've ever had a female guest on, which is not
right.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, you know, I like that you're saying that, because at one point I was talking about how, you know, blah, 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 we don't give enough women recognition. And then I realized 99% of the people I follow on Twitter are men.
Exactly. Right.
Like, so like I was part of the problem.
Our own complicity in this. Right.
Exactly.
And,
yeah.
And it is being more conscious with who we want to ask to be on our podcast.
I understand why women don't necessarily want to put themselves out there, because it's disgusting. Like, you're like,
yeah,
like, you know what I mean? So it's more of a matter of making it a friendly landscape. And then when that happens, I mean, diversity of opinion leads to intelligent conversation, and that's what hockey needs.
Exactly. Yeah. And I think that everyone that has that has the privilege in this industry of being a straight white man needs to weaponize that to open doors for other people and play an active role in that.
Now I know I go on a lot there and you're about to close up, but I'm going to tell you a story that kind of represents all of this. So my first day in Montreal, I get an email from Metro that says, hey, do you want to cover the Habs in the playoffs? That's how I got my start. Do you want to cover that? Like, literally just an email. I'm like, yes, you know, sure. So a couple days later, I'm in Montreal and I'm sitting beside Heather Engel, good, great person. She now works for the Sabres. And she saw I was green, so she kind of showed me around. You know, I had no idea what I was doing, but she showed me the table. Here's where you sit. There's a hierarchy and all that. And then in the first period, right after, Connor McKenna comes over. He was doing the post-game show for 690, and he taps me on the shoulder. He's like, hey, man, come do this with me. I was like, sure. I've never done radio. I'll try it. And then I turn around to Heather. I'm like, man, this stuff goes fast here in hockey. I got an email. All of a sudden, I'm covering the playoffs. I'm going to be on the radio. It's great. And she's like, yeah, that's great, Mark. I later found out that she had been there for 12 years and never got once invited on the radio. And then I realized, like, oh,
yeah,
it goes really easy for me because I'm in a situation that's conducive to getting privilege. So it's, yeah, sorry, I didn't want to drag everything down at the end. But I do think, honestly, I'm really, really hoping that we can get hockey to a point where the morality involved matches the beauty on the ice. That would be the ideal way to go, because right now hockey is not for everyone.
It really isn't. And I think on that note, Mark, thank you so much for joining us for these
this
two
was
episodes.
So much fun.
Okay. And another thing. No, I'm just joking. I'm just joking.
Aaron, as always, thank you so much for
hey,
joining
hey,
me.
Hey, hold on. Hold on. I wanted to hear Sinead O'Connor's Nothing Compares, but we decided that's a bad song for intro and outro. Anyone listening, Google Sinead O'Connor, Nothing Compares to You, because that is... I mean, that's beauty in a song.
So Mark, can you hit that high note?
Absolutely not. I started smoking Camel and filters in like the late 80s. So yeah, my voice just cuts out at a certain point. And I think
I was negative 20 years old in the mid 80s.
Exactly. So I think my voice is the reason autotune was invented.
On that note, thank you everyone so much for listening, and you will be able to listen to our next episode probably on Friday, which is going to be back.
We'll see what happens.
We'll see what happens.
time is cold. Raise the roof and have some fun. Throw away the work to be done. Let the music play on, play on, play on. Everybody sing, everybody dance. Lose yourself in wild romance. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta, forever. Come on and sing along. We're going to party, caramba, fiesta, forever.